Welcome to the British Society for Heart Failure podcast series. I'm Maggie Simpson. This podcast will focus on the crucial role primary care clinicians have in the recognition, diagnosis, and management of heart failure. I'm delighted to be joined today by Bev Bostock and Dr. Jim Moore. Bev is an advanced nurse practitioner in Gloucestershire and also works for Devon Training Hub as an education facilitator. Bev specialises in the management of long-term conditions, is a committee member for the Primary Care Cardiovascular and Respiratory Societies, and is editor-in-chief of Practice Nurse Journal. Jim is a GP with specialist interest in heart failure, as well as president of the Primary Care Cardiovascular Society. Jim is also an observer to the board of the British Society for Heart Failure and represents primary care in the cardiovascular arena at both local and national level. So thank you both for joining us today. So Jim, as we're likely to have a varied audience from different professional groups, would you mind just starting with an explanation of what heart failure is and its prognosis, please?
Yeah, so heart failure is actually the end point of most cardiovascular either risk factors or conditions. So whether you look at hypertension or whether you look at heart valve disease and even coronary artery disease, as these conditions progress, ultimately people end up in heart failure. And a diagnosis of heart failure is made on two separate counts. One, you have to have symptoms and signs of heart failure. So the typical symptoms, as we're all well aware now from the F-word campaign, is fighting for breath. So breathlessness on exertion, fluid retention and fatigue. And obviously there may be signs of heart failure as well. And there also has to be some demonstrable cardiac abnormality, and typically that is something that we find on doing echocardiography. So you have to have both those areas covered when you make a diagnosis of heart failure. Prognostically, a patient who is admitted to hospital with acute decompensated heart failure, and say over a period of a year has no evidence-based treatment, then the mortality in that particular patient, untreated patient group, would be somewhere around 40 to 50%. But we know that in many instances, there are evidence-based treatments for heart failure, for instance, in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. And we know that getting patients onto these evidence-based therapies, these multiple evidence-based therapies, and that's not just pharmacological therapies, that can be device therapies as well, but you can reduce improve that prognosis significantly to somewhere around perhaps 7%, an instance of 7% mortality per year. So that's a huge, huge improvement. Yet it still means that if you're looking over a longer time span, if you're looking over 5 or 10 years, the mortality remains significant. And I think it's important at this point also to mention the significance of an early diagnosis in heart failure compared with, say, presenting for the first time acutely decompensated with heart failure, and some work that Claire Taylor in Oxford did just looking at the median survival times. And basically, when you look at a population of patients whose heart failure has been diagnosed in the non-acute setting compared with acute, then your median survival is improved probably twice as much if you're diagnosed in the community as opposed to when you're if it's related to an acute admission. So that's why it's so important in primary care that we're aware of heart failure and that where possible we're making that diagnosis as quickly as possible.
Now, we know that most people with heart failure were diagnosed on their admission to hospital with their first heart failure event. And that's despite up to 40% having presented to primary care in the year before their admission with symptoms of heart failure. Now, the symptoms of heart failure that you mentioned, fatigue, breathlessness, fluid buildup, can also be caused by a range of other conditions. So what tools are available to help make an early diagnosis in primary care?
So firstly, the statistics that you quote, I think, come from Alex Bottle's paper that was published in 2018 that looked retrospectively at a cohort of patients with a diagnosis of heart failure and who over the 5 years prior to that diagnosis, looking at the GP records, they had declared symptoms of heart failure during that time. And when they looked at the pathways followed by that population, almost 50% of those patients did not follow a sort of guideline-related pathway. For instance, an example of that would be the NICE guidance, where patient presents with symptoms of heart failure. You should do an NT-proBNP test, and if that NT-proBNP test is raised, then that patient, potential patient, should be referred urgently for echocardiography and specialist assessment. So that is a sort of, that's the standard, certainly national pathway south of the border. But we know from Alex Wattle's work that almost 50% of patients did not actually follow that pathway. And I think that, you know, central to being able to make an early diagnosis is actually, one, having access to NT-proBNP, but just as importantly, actually using NT-proBNP in the pathway to making a diagnosis. Because we know from certainly recent data that I've seen that probably 75% of hospital trusts are commissioned to commissioned to allow access to NT-proBNP testing in primary care. So somewhere around 75% of trusts. So in the majority of case areas, primary certainly in England, primary care have access to NT-proBNP, but the variability in actually using the test is huge. There's a 40-fold difference between CCG areas with the lowest use of NT-proBNP compared with those with the greatest use.
Thanks, Jim. Now, Bev, we know that heart failure doesn't come on its own. A paper published a couple of years ago demonstrated that almost 80% of patients with heart failure have at least three comorbidities. And so they are likely to already be attending primary care for management of these comorbidities. We also know the role of the nurse in primary care as being an expert clinician in the management of some of these comorbidities. So do we need to raise more awareness of the prevalence of heart failure in these populations, perhaps thinking about diabetic patients who may already be attending primary care services? And how can we increase awareness of the symptoms of heart failure so that nurses too can play a role in early recognition and early diagnosis?
I think that's a really good point, a really good question, because you're absolutely right. You know, when you think about long-term conditions, they do come along in twos, threes and fours. And we know that general practice nurses are extremely involved in the management of long-term conditions. So often take the lead on areas such as diabetes. We'll be looking out for chronic kidney disease. We'll be monitoring patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and doing hypertension reviews and CVD reviews. And all of those patients are going to be at risk of developing heart failure. And so I think the F Word campaign is really important to remind nurses about proactively asking about symptoms, and also not colluding with patients who might put down any symptoms that they have to just getting a bit older. We know that as you get older, you've got an increased risk of heart failure anyway. You've got an increased risk of the other conditions that we just mentioned. So it's very easy for people to say, well, it's not surprising I'm breathless. You know, I've got COPD, or it's not surprising that I get some ankle swelling. My circulation probably isn't all that it was. So really being a bit of a detective when carrying out annual reviews, when seeing patients, maybe asking them about breathlessness and then asking them specifically about that breathlessness. When do they feel it? Is it on exertion? Have they noticed anything happening at nighttime specifically? And just really getting an increased awareness with the nurse themselves to ask those questions, but also planting the idea with the patients that these are important symptoms to report and to make people aware of. So I would like to see nurses in general practice having an increased awareness of heart failure as a potential diagnosis in practically every patient they see where they're carrying out a long-term conditions review.
I love the word proactive, Bev, when applied to what we do in primary care. And I think one of the most proactive things that we could actually do is to look at the templates that we all tend to use in primary care, in our long-term conditions clinics, and add in those relevant questions to heart failure. So, for instance, in the type 2 diabetes template, which no doubt you and certainly our nurses in practice will follow, asking questions around breathlessness, weight gain, edema, and particularly, you know, questions around orthopnea, PND, as you say. So I think there's an opportunity there. But when you think about it, Bev, I mean, we should be doing the same, I think, also for those patients we're reviewing with coronary artery disease on an annual basis, and some of these other, other, or perhaps most of the long-term conditions.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that the sooner that's embedded into practice, not only will the clinicians involved start thinking automatically about asking about these symptoms, but the patient will start to expect them and maybe anticipate them and say, I remember that you asked me last time about breathlessness and fluid retention. So I have noticed recently, you know, and then it might actually become the patient's proactivity that really ups the ante with making these diagnoses early, as you say, and therefore getting the interventions that we know will make a difference.
Yeah. And of course, with the new QOF, heart failure indicator, where there's a requirement within a 12-month period with patients on our registers with heart failure to do an annual review of their functional capacity and also a medication review. It means that heart failure has officially become in primary care a long-term condition. And the individual, the healthcare practitioner who's going to be doing that review, of course, isn't the GP, it's going to be the practice nurse, or indeed, you know, kind of looking to the future, it may well be our pharmacists, practice pharmacists.
Absolutely. I'm sure there are some already doing that, but that really does bring us to the issue of competency. Jim, I work as an expert witness for a clinical negligence firm. We want people to be competent in carrying out these reviews. And it's always slightly anxiety inducing, the thought that people work to a template without actually understanding, you know, the reason, the rationale for asking questions and what they should do if the answers to the questions are not in line with good management of that heart failure. So people need to understand about the options pharmacologically and non-pharmacologically, what lifestyle can do too. So lots of opportunities really to improve the care of that individual, but it has to be in a competent way.
And this is where education is so important. And of course, you know, part of the organization that we are both part of, the Primary Care Cardiovascular Society, sees itself as having a really important educational role across cardiovascular disease, but including in the area of heart failure. So absolutely right, Bev. Having said that, I mean, we've you know, my practice, and I suppose, you know, that there is perhaps some experience support for our practice and us in delivering, you know, heart failure reviews. But I've been enthused by practice nurse our practice nurses' approach towards being able to do heart failure reviews. Not only their enthusiasm for doing it, but how quickly they're able to, you know, pick up that skill set and that knowledge is terribly encouraging. So, and you know, giving an example. You know, using my practice as an example, the practice nurse who was doing our heart failure reviews and had been doing them for the last 18 months has now retired. And I'm in the process of just supporting and training one of another practice nurse in doing this. And again, hugely, hugely enthusiastic about extending her skill set and her experience, which is great.
I think that's so important. I think also it's worth flagging up the BSH competency framework that exists. I think if people are wondering, you know, am I competent to carry out these reviews, then they can go through the checklist and they can determine whether they need further training and development, mentorship from someone like you, although I'm sure there aren't many Jim Moores out there, but, you know, a colleague who's working in that field and, you know, has a special interest can be there to support people to develop their competences. And I think that's a really safe way of ensuring that patients are supported, but also that their healthcare professional knows that they're on the right track.
Thanks for highlighting the importance of competence and education. As you have mentioned, Bev, the British Society for Heart Failure Nurse Forum have published a competency framework for heart failure care. While the primary audience is heart failure specialist nurses, when designing the framework, we did consider the need to support colleagues in different care settings and with varied exposure to heart failure care. So the framework supports competence from novice to expert. The framework is available on the British Society for Heart Failure website. Building competence may also help support closer links between heart failure specialists and primary care nurses or AHPs who are looking at the framework and looking for areas that they need to fill in gaps in knowledge and competence with. And as you've both highlighted, the Primary Care Cardiovascular Society and British Society for Heart Failure provide regular education to support the development of and maintenance of these competencies. Now, Bev, thinking about the diagnosis of heart failure, is there a particular role for the nurse in recognising the psychological impact or psychological distress associated with the diagnosis of a long-term condition and the impact it can have on their life?
Absolutely, no question. We know that people with long-term conditions can suffer from anxiety and depression, and we know that that can be particularly so in heart failure, which has got one of the highest burdens in that respect. And so I think nurses working in general practice are used to supporting people with long-term conditions and know about the resources that are available, maybe a social prescriber, for example, or a counsellor in-house that might be able to help. But using what I consider to be fairly basic principles from cognitive behavioural therapy, for example, and really getting people to take a different perspective on their symptoms and think about what they can do rather than focusing on what they can't, that could be really useful. So I think potentially nurses may have the capacity to do that themselves, as in the knowledge to do that themselves, but also more importantly, they know where the support is available if they want to refer people on.
Now, we are practicing at a time period where there are many treatments available for heart failure, medications, devices, advanced strategies. Jim, you highlighted earlier the importance of early initiation of these therapies because they have an impact on quality of life and outcomes. And thinking about the importance of remaining up to date with latest therapies, what was optimal treatment for heart failure 5 years ago is no longer optimal treatment. So are we potentially missing opportunities to optimise the care and outcomes for some people living with heart failure?
No, indeed. And there's been much conversation, hasn't there, in the last year or so about pillars of heart failure therapy, particularly in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. So traditionally, we think about triple therapy for patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. That's where they have systolic, left ventricular systolic impairment and an ejection fraction of 40% or less. And triple therapy involves a RAS-blocking drug, typically an ACE or an ARB, and then added in alongside a beta blocker and an MRA. So that's been the kind of standard therapy over a number of years. But of course, in the last 5 years, or 5 years ago, we had the introduction, or approximately 5 years ago, the introduction of sacubitril-valsartan, which was a combination therapy of an ARB, angiotensin receptor blocker, and a neprilysin inhibitor, which had shown in symptomatic, well-treated patients to have additional significant benefits over standard ACE inhibition. And then very, very recently, we've seen the introduction of the SGLT2 inhibitors for patients. I mean, traditionally, so these are glucose-lowering therapies traditionally used in type 2 diabetes, but now being shown in population, whether diabetic or not, to be beneficial to patients with a heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. So we now have what we describe as the five pillars of therapy. And I think it's importantly, we know that the evidence very much supports introducing these therapies quickly. You know, we know that, as an example, with dapagliflozin, which has just been licensed for the use in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction and gone through the process of NICE technology appraisal, we know that its benefits are there statistically significant benefits within 4 weeks. We know that we see the same thing with sacubitril-valsartan. So I think we're rather than following a very stepwise approach, Maggie, towards the introduction of these drugs, you know, one drug at a time, optimizing the dose of that drug, adding a second drug. We're now thinking about, in almost in a more creative way, about what's appropriate for that patient who's in front of us, and actually tailoring our therapy to that often complex individual who may have, you know, who's running low blood pressure or may have CKD. And that's why, for me, it's really critically important that heart failure nurses are central to that process of optimization of therapies. But you're quite right. We're in catch up at the moment as far as heart failure are concerned. We've lost a bit of ground in terms of what we've been able to do in optimizing therapies. We know there are our patient lists are increasing quite significantly, and we know there's a significant resource problem around heart failure nursing time. So, you know, thinking to the future, what strategies might there be around trying to cope and perhaps support heart failure specialist nurses? It may well be that we can use primary care to support some of that work and some of those titrations. But of course, there's also resource problems within primary care. And at the moment, I think, I don't know what Bev's impression is, but I think at the moment we're busier than we've ever been over the last few years. There are many changes happening within primary care. There's a move towards e-consultations, which seems to be increasing demand on resources within primary care. So I think we have to think, one, about whether primary care can help support the optimization of these therapies, but also, you have to consider the resources that will be necessary to do that.
I think another thing that we are anticipating is an increase in the number of patients presenting with heart failure because they didn't present with potential myocardial infarction during the pandemic. We know that a lot of people didn't go to hospital with those problems. And we also know that, you know, there was less monitoring of blood pressure and some of the other risk factors that we know may increase somebody's potential to develop heart failure. And so we're all, I think, going to be under increased pressure. And that's why working together is so important. And the links that I've made with local heart failure specialist nurses have been invaluable in supporting each other with patients that we share and making sure that the patient's getting the best possible care between us. And you cannot overestimate how useful it is to have a specialist colleague alongside you that you know that you can pick up the phone to anytime and, you know, work out the way forward between you. So, we're going to have to do that, I think, to deal with the workload that is coming our way, as well as the one we already have.
So we know that the prevalence of heart failure was increasing pre-pandemic. We now have pandemic pressures, we have late presentations of myocardial infarction, people avoiding hospital with symptoms, in addition to the significant change in available resource. So how do we move forward? The pool of people at risk of heart failure is increasing. People are living longer with heart failure because they are so well treated. So how do we, as we raise awareness and as more people come forward with symptoms of heart failure, how do we future-proof heart failure care in primary care and also how primary and secondary care work together?
A magic wand isn't an answer.
It's about investment and results. You know, I use that the term investing in those additional resources, and that's for me what we need. We need to realise that if we want to attain if we wish to attain the standards that are going to be set for, certainly in England, for cardiac networks around heart failure care, we're going to have to invest in resources. We're going to have to seriously look at heart failure specialist nursing resource. We're also going to have to think about, you know, the role of primary care in making an earlier diagnosis. So we need to have global access to NT-proBNP, both for primary and secondary care, so we can make an earlier diagnosis. So hopefully, by making an early diagnosis, we can get patients treated earlier with better outcomes. We're obviously, you know, there are many things that are pushing towards raising the profile of heart failure within primary care currently. So I mentioned the changes that we're seeing in QOF. We know that within primary care networks, heart failure has now been included as in the cardiovascular disease prevention agenda. So it's not just the ABC of atrial fibrillation, blood pressure and cholesterol, but heart failure is now part of that. And I mean, integral to the delivery of cardiovascular care within primary care and within primary care networks is going to be the recommendation that within every primary care network in England, there's a CVD lead. So, and that doesn't necessarily need to be a GP. That could be a practice nurse or it could be a pharmacist. And that's going to be an important link, I think, in raising standards of care for heart failure patients moving forward.
So thank you both very much for your time today and for highlighting the crucial role that you and your colleagues in primary care play in the management of heart failure. If you would like to know more about heart failure, the F-Word campaign, or the British Society for Heart Failure, please follow us on Twitter or go to our website at www.bsh.org.uk. Thank you for listening.